Welcome to the Wildcast Podcast, coming to you from Wildcast Studios with your hosts, Adam Lund and Jeremy Boucher.
Welcome into Wildcast Studios for another episode of the Wildcast Podcast, your unofficial voice for all things Moncton Wildcats, presented by Alpha's Appliance Solutions. Right now, they got the Whirlpool Saver, the savings event. Save $150 when you purchase any two qualifying Whirlpool Maytag kitchen appliances, as well save $300 when you purchase any three from now till May 1st. As always, Fanisters, I am your host, Adam Lund, and I am joined by your favorite co-hoster, Big Brother, and March Madness Bracket aficionado, Mr. Jeremy Boucher. Was your Easter, sir? Minus the hockey, of course. How was your Easter?
Well, Easter was pretty good.
Yeah.
Quiet, and there's not much to do. You know, you wake up on Sunday morning and watched Avery find all of her millions of eggs and try not to eat them all.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much how I spent my my weekend.
How many are left?
She doesn't go through chocolate very fast, so there's...
But does the dad tax kick in like Halloween, or...?
Not as much.
Because you got to pay for it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's... Yeah. I mean, there's that.
Yeah.
But, you know, just... The thought of me and sugar in my body is just... Ugh. I like sugar, but can't do it much.
Crushed a chocolate bunny yesterday.
There you go. Yeah.
Crushed a dollar store chocolate bunny. We, I don't know if you had the turkey or the ham. We went with neither of those because it's just the two of us. We went with a nice steak dinner.
There
my
you
wife
go.
Is, she bought a sous vide earlier, I guess not last winter-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been dying to get a steak. So we went to Dolma Foods, bought
ooh,
a nice chunk
fancy.
Of, yeah, nice chunk of meat. And she sous vide'd that sucker. And if there's a way to cook a steak, that is the way.
Sous vide,
so,
yeah.
Nice little steak, and then we just binge watch season 5 of How to Get Away with Murder.
Nice.
Yeah, so, and then I crushed a chocolate bunny because we buy chocolate bunnies for ourselves. Because,
yeah, I might have done that myself, but, you know, there was...
What'd you guys have?
Jambon.
Yeah?
Jambon, yeah. Did that Saturday night before the game, and other than that, woke up Sunday morning and went for a nice family breakfast at the Igloo. And that was pretty much my weekend.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you catch up on Big Brother? Are you caught up? How are we doing?
I am caught up. Yeah, I am very much caught up. And it's been quite the week.
Bailey's still there?
So Bailey is still around.
Oh, thank goodness.
And so let me just kind of do like a quick little recap. So as I said last week, Vivek from St. John was the HOH. And he had nominated Bailey, who was his main target, and Goose, whose name I finally learned. His name is Elijah.
Oh, okay.
So came to the power veto ceremony, and Kayla won the power veto ceremony. Kayla and Bailey are aligned together. So she took Bailey off the block, and in a very shocking turn of events...
Mm-hmm.
So the week prior, right, when Vivek was on the block, he was pulled off because Dennis won the power veto and decided to take Vivek off the block when Vivek was going to go home unanimously. There was no question about it. So this week, even though Dennis saved Vivek's big brother life, who does Vivek decide to backdoor? Dennis. So Vivek, it was not a very smart move. Anthony and Victoria, who are the returning players, are getting into the ear of everybody. And they're basically playing the game right now and making all the decisions in the house. So Anthony convinced Vivek to backdoor Vivek's best friend, and then Vivek went home, and so that was quite the surprise.
So the new people didn't jump on kicking the old ones out, eh? Like they're allowing them to survive. Like, did they get any immunity for being like a week?
They had 1 week of safety,
so now there's no safety,
and no one's on the block if they wanted to.
Wow.
Yeah. So fast forward to this week, Goose won the head of household. And Goose nominated Todd, from Newfoundland,
mm-hmm.
and Tola. And I believe Bailey is the backdoor target, so she could potentially be going home this week. I haven't seen the results of the power of veto yet. But it was kind of funny during the nomination ceremony when Goose said his first nominee was Todd, and Todd just sat there in the chair as if he didn't know what to do. Like, Goose was like, Todd? Todd, this is your seat. You need to go sit. And Todd's like, oh, right, yeah, I'm a nominee. Huh. Like, he zoned out, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen, because I don't know if he's... Todd has mentioned on the show that he hasn't been... He's not a big... Not a huge fan of the show.
So it'd be like me going on there?
Yeah. Not like, really you just sure wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So he just sat there and just didn't know, didn't go sit in the nominee chair or anything. It took him three times for his name to be said to actually go and sit down. So it's kind of funny. I guess we'll see what happens this week.
So I think I've asked you this before, but have you applied to be on Big Brother?
Once. Before I was married and had a child.
Yeah,
I did apply. Obviously,
looking for a showmance. No, but would you go on it again? Would you apply again?
Probably not. No, it's too much. I'd probably have a heart attack from stress just because it's just there's so much going on at once, and you got to watch what you say. Not that I'd say anything. When I say that, I don't mean that I'd say something inappropriate.
Yeah.
I would say you don't know who's going to go and talk to.
In context of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the context of the game, you really got to watch what you say because it's, that's Big Brother. It can come and slap you right across the face and out of nowhere. It's just too much for me. I like watching the game and seeing these people experience it themselves, but I could not do it myself.
And at some point with Big Brother Canada and Big Brother and Survivor and. Like, at some point, every strategy's been done or been seen, or, like, how do you keep coming up with new strategies? We actually watched, 7 minutes of Survivor Quebec on Novo Channel on...
didn't know it existed.
Blank TV. So Layla looks it up. Yeah, they literally, it's people from Quebec go to the Philippines, and it's full-on just like Survivor.
Really?
I thought it was going to be Survivor the... show just dubbed in Quebec.
Yeah.
Nope. Full on Quebec, Quebecois.
Wow.
People going to the Dominican. And so when we flipped over, we saw just an end of it. And then it was a bunch of commercials. And I'm like, yep, no, it's full on French people in the Philippines playing Survivor. So I got to congratulate you, man. You have two of the four teams in the final four.
Thank you.
UConn and Purdue, who beat your... Gonzaga Bulldogs,
kind of
saw that coming. You knew it wasn't their year, so you still have your chance for UConn-Purdue final and a UConn win. So as everyone can see, and if you can't see, go to the YouTube and watch about 6 minutes in. I'm wearing my Flyers shirt as they're heading to the Atlantic.
That's right.
Yeah. So you've got the Halifax Max who won in game five, Kensington Wild, Newfoundland Growlers. I was going to say the NL Growlers. Moncton Flyers, obviously, in the Subaru Steel. Just on Moncton, how do you think the Flyers will fare in this one? I mean, the Max looked like a superpower, but they've been taken to the limit in both series with the Islanders and with the Steel. Now that's a lot of hockey you're playing before you get to Atlantic. So, when do they go on the 4th, which is
Thursday,
and they just finished playing Sunday. Now there's no travel because it's in Dartmouth, but just your thoughts. I mean, this is another event for scouts to kind of continue to finish putting their list together. I know that we got Trois-Rivières and Magog in Quebec in that final, so it's kind of coming down to the one-stop shop for the scouts who are starting to put lists together as the playoffs kind of get going.
Yeah, for sure. I really don't know. I think they're a little overmatched going into this one. I think Dartmouth and Halifax definitely have the edge. But I guess it comes down to, scheduling and, you never know with these tournaments. It's nice because it's not a, if you lose in the round robin, you're not out. Mm-hmm. Right? You still have a chance to maybe get a tiebreaker or into the semifinal. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm not too familiar with the Pinnacle Growlers. I know they were, I think they made it to the semifinals or quarterfinals of the Moncktonian. I can't remember exactly that far back, but really the competition in Newfoundland isn't very good.
It feels like it's the Growlers every year.
Yeah, because there's not much. You know, there's right. Tri-Pen, there's East Coast Blizzard. I can't even name all the teams in Newfoundland.
But those are the ones that are kind of the top teams. Those are the three that you kind of hear about a lot.
Yeah, so it'll always be the Pinnacle Growlers unless there's, Western Kings, I think, is another one.
Yeah.
There's really Pinnacle Growlers is basically it's all of St. John's, right? And that's where all the population is, right? So that's where all your big names are going to come from. There's never any Western Kings will never have competition. Tri-Pen now, East Coast Blizzard could maybe come out one of these years, but it's I think I got to go with. I think the Max will win this one. I think honestly, it's they've had stellar goaltending, and they've got a great mix of veterans and rookies, and you know I think it's six or seven draft eligible players they have on their team this year, which is crazy to think that they're doing this well with such a young team, but it's their veterans that are really getting the job done.
Yeah, you talk about the. The coaching possibilities that we get to in a month, 3 weeks-ish. That's a name, again, Boyce, that does great things with the U18 team, just like DeCourcy does here. They continue to just keep winning. And I saw the Steel play, obviously, at the Moncktonian. And Aiden O'Donnell and that crew is a pretty good team. So I think you may see an all-Nova Scotia final. Mm-hmm. I mean, those two teams just kind of beat the hell out of each other in a five-game series, which... I didn't even know they were going to play. I figured they were both going to just go, and you explained that they get to pick their seeding. So now I guess it doesn't matter, right? Like the Max go in as the number one seed, Nova Scotia champion, and Steel go in as a host, right?
You still have to give away a banner. You still have to give away a trophy.
Yeah, I guess.
Right? So it's...
This was weird that it started like after the Moncton series kind of almost finished up. Uh-huh. Right? Like they didn't kind of start at the same time.
Yeah. But Aiden O'Donnell... probably one of the better players on Dartmouth, but he's declaring for the OHL draft.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a loss there. And
again, that's now three players in the top five potentially that the Q has lost out on. So it's one of those silly little rules. Like it works out in our favor where we get Mueller and Sumpf, based on that rule and, Lapierre, in that rule, but that's back-to-back years with Sim and now O'Donnell. Yep. But O'Donnell's more of a high name than Sim was. Mm-hmm. So I think Sim went in the third or fourth round in the OHL draft. So I wouldn't necessarily think that the Q has a reporting problem based on what's happening. Or is this just one of those quirky rules that kind of...
It's an education problem, I think.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say. I think it's an education problem. They need to beef up their, how can I say this? They just have to know what there is to offer. There's obviously some organizations that have a very good education system. There's some that's not so good, and those not so good teams need to get it going.
Yeah. All right, don't forget to follow us on the social medias, Twitter, Moncton Wildcast, Instagram Wildcast Podcast, TikTok Wildcast Podcast, and of course, like and subscribe and smash that subscribe button on YouTube. Don't forget to hit the little bell so you'll be notified if we still have a podcast post-game, which we'll get to in a little bit. We might still have some YouTube watch parties, but we will definitely have to see, but you can catch up on all our content is now. Once the playoffs end, it rolls right into draft content, and well, this guy, you ain't gonna want to miss his draft content. All right, let's get some news and notes from around the cube.
News and notes from around the cube.
All right, some hardware was given away this past week in the league. We had. had Antonin Vero with 107 points in 68 games, was the Jean Béliveau Trophy winner. Justin Poirier was the first recipient of the Mario Lemieux Trophy with 51 goals in 68 games. Somehow not good enough to be a top prospect invite.
Nope.
Still one of those, which Bécomo giving away the Red Wigs. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. It's good marketing, good promo.
Yeah, that's absolutely perfect. And William Rousseau takes home his second straight Jacques Plante Trophy after leading the QMJHL with a 2.24 goals against average. And then obviously Bécomo ends up as the regular season champion. I'm not sure what that trophy was called. And I think that's kind of it for hardware so far.
Yep.
Until we get to the end of the league year. So, some more news coming out of Halifax. Jordan Dumé was not in the lineup for game two after he re-aggravated his lower body injury this past week. Somebody said it's an abdominal tear.
A double abdominal tear.
His return remains uncertain. Down 0-2. I mean, if he wasn't coming back, if he's legitimately hurt, sure. But if he wasn't coming back for his team down 0-1 and then 0-2, I think he ends his Q career on quite the sour note.
Yeah, you could say that again. I mean, a lot of people, including myself, are kind of, I don't know, I'm not sure if I want to believe this or not, but, you know, I guess you can all form your own opinions.
Well, and the timing was the worst part because it came out after that kid in Brandon,
mm-hmm.
which I don't remember what his name was suspended.
Yeah, eight games for testing positive for a banned substance. Again, a little different. The one in Brandon kind of is a perfect example of what the argument I tried to make on Twitter. You know, if this was a fourth line player in Valdor, the suspension would have been a lot longer. And that's the case in Brandon. This was a fourth line player who had one goal all season, and he was suspended eight games for testing positive for a banned substance.
Yeah,
this is a superstar who got pulled over for DUI and only got five games.
Yep.
You know, it's a clear case of a little bit of superstar treatment. So
all these little things come out to show a miss by the league.
Yeah, and so it's he had been practicing. He was ready to go for game two, and I guess he had felt some pain in his groin during the week and went for an MRI on Thursday, and it revealed a double abdominal tear. So you can be safe to say
doesn't sound very good.
He's out for a while.
Yeah.
It's indefinitely for sure. I'll be surprised if he makes an appearance in this series against Bathurst.
No, and I don't know how Columbus's American Hockey League team is, but it will really look bad on the league if Halifax was to be upset by Bathurst and then he's coming back shortly after that series is over in Cleveland, I believe they're the Monsters. But either way, the AHL team, like, that's just kind of how it would look. So again, the timing of the kid getting suspended eight games and then, you know, he's out again. If he's truly injured, it sucks for him because he was working back. But if he's not, and this is kind of a sweep it under the rug type thing, then it's even worse, but so we'll move on to the playoffs.
Playoffs.
They kicked off. The QMJHL is looking for their fifth straight Memorial Cup, and the road to Saginaw began on Friday. We'll go through seven of the series, not in depth or anything like that, just kind of how we go. And the Volts up 2-0, Huskies up 2-0, Victor up 2-0, Sherbrooke up 2-0, Bécomo, surprise, up 2-0. Just kidding. Bathurst up 2-0. Chicoutimi, not so much of a surprise, up 2-0. And Cape Breton up 2-0.
Mm.
Every single series is up 2-0, and only two are kind of upsets so far. In the Western Conference, I think the only surprise is Sherbrooke is up 2-0, and it could easily have gone the other way or been a split because both those games went to overtime.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's probably going to be the, and that's kind of like our series against Baycomo last year. You know, you're probably going to see a lot of overtimes in that series, but the other Western Conference series are, I mean, with the exception of the game one between Victoriaville and Shawinigan that went to OT, they haven't been close.
No, you had to feel that was Shawinigan's chance to get one.
Yeah, and same thing with Baycomo and Charlottetown, has been close. So it's, you know, the Drummondville series, the Baycomo series, the Victo series, Cape Breton, it's gone pretty much how I expected it to go. The others, you know, there's could be, I think the Halifax one is a bit of a surprise for most. I did see a lot of people take Bathurst, actually, so they're probably very happy with their choice so far.
Yeah, that series reminds me of the Halifax Quebec one in 2019, where they went to seven against Quebec and they just couldn't shake them. Like, it was just the team that played them well. But I mean, they went 5-3 against Bathurst, and Bathurst won, I think, the last few games. So both games, again, if you're Halifax, much like the Armada, you feel you're in the series because it could have been a split. You could be up 2-0. But that line, that Milo Rollins line, is not just killing us. They're killing the Mooseheads too. And that's what you said. If they can't control that line, they're in trouble.
It's going to go the other way. It's just weird. I mean, you haven't seen much from Bitichek all series. You haven't seen much from Cataford. No. So it makes me wonder, are these guys playing hurt too?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's shocking that I'd never expected Bathurst to win both games in Halifax. You know, that's...
No, I was thinking a split would be really good for them.
Yeah. But for them to go home up 2-0 is very, very, very good. And we'd love to see, you know, a full barn in Bathurst because, that place was... The night we went, that place was rocking.
And it was 60% full,
ish,
and it was rocking. And I said to you guys, to you and Lynn, I was like, when the warm up started, it didn't look that full, and I was like, it's just that close barn. I can't imagine what it was like in 2019 with a full barn, and then it was like 60% full. And once they started rolling, it's loud in there. And I mean, if they can
rolling.
Yeah, he liked that.
Nice one.
If they can get a good crowd, and kind of jump on the Mooseheads early, that building will be rocking, and it'll be tough for, you know, like, it's pretty much a mirror of this series. Just the games are a little bit closer there. Perfect storm, no pun intended, for Cape Breton. They're doing excellent things to promote that playoff series. They had the coaches on the radio promoting a winter storm coming. They had the hype video about the storm, the whiteout, all that. They got the best opponent, and they absolutely pumped them with crowds of 4,500, which is more than they had all season. It's a perfect storm for them. They were one of the hottest teams coming in, them and Chicoutimi, which is why that 1 point against Victoriaville and Chicoutimi is killing us. A, because we'd fare better against Rimouski, which we'll get into. But B, we were robbed of a Chicoutimi-Cape Breton round one series. We might get it in round two, the way that things are going right now. It's too bad that we didn't get that series. But Cape Breton, they're getting everything they wanted. Favorable opponent. The crowds have been rocking. They're up 2-0. Like, they got a chance to finish this thing.
I don't think Rimouski will even win a game at this point.
No.
I think this is Cape Breton. Unless there's something, there's going to be the crowd makes a difference in Rimouski. I don't see a scenario where they can make it a series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would not be surprised if we're here next week talking about an Eagle sweep.
Yeah.
Which would be good. Give them a break going into round two.
Yep.
Because if there's an organization that needs, you know, a long playoff run.
It's Cape Breton. Yeah.
Yeah,
and they're already selling out the bottom bowl. They sweep Rimouski, and they're looking forward to, if they get Chicoutimi, if Chicoutimi ends up beating us, or they might even get Halifax in the next round. Yeah. Like, it'll be, they need a long
It'll be long something.
Um, as the series shift, which one is most likely to kind of come back to being a series? And you can throw ours in there if you want, but yeah. Is it just the Sherbrooke Armada? Because right now, the way these things have shaken out, I think that's the only series that can kind of come back and maybe extend past five.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's not much. I mean, you can't count out Halifax. You know, this is a team, you know, a few years ago that was down 3-0 to us in a series against the Remparts, and they came back to win it in 7.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the organization can never be counted out. As exciting as it is as Wildcats fans to see Bathurst win 2 games in Halifax, I'm not counting out the Mooseheads until that final buzzer goes off and Bathurst has the 4th win. I'm not counting out the Mooseheads.
Yeah. We'd enjoy it much more if we weren't getting shit pumped and down 0-2. I'll tell you that much. Like, yeah, it's cool to see them lose both games in overtime, but also when you're down 0-2, it's really tough to talk. Yeah, I think you're right on that one. And I mean, Sherbrooke and the Armada, and the crazy part about which series was it? Baie-Comeau, I think. Like, their top guys haven't even really got going. Not they have to in this type of series, but even in Sherbrooke, their 4 rookies are leading the team in scoring.
Wow.
For Sherbrooke. So, again, Charlo hasn't been bad, but, again, both of those games went to overtime. So, kind of in it. And, again, Shawinigan had a chance.
That was a chance.
Yeah. If they get that first one on the road, who knows how tight Victoria maybe is in round 2. And then as much as Gatineau believed in there and had to get their belief going, Rousseau has let in 1 goal in 2 games. Like,
yep.
That's, and I don't even think series for this season. Just trying to see who's for Victor. I don't think they've had their, or Ren, I don't think they've had their top guys going either. As I get to it, Ruanda, where are you? If I could spell. Zonin's got 4 points. Oh, I guess, never mind. Burrow's got 4, and Vernon's got 4, but Borash only has 1 point. Higgins has 1 point. Samuel Sabois, no points. Nothing. In 2 games. So
he'll get going. He's a exactly. Playoff. Like, they're doing playoff hockey.
Yeah. And then, like I was saying, in Sherbrooke, friend Francis Deesh, Maverick LeChance, and Olivier Lampron are the 3 leading scorers for Sherbrooke as rookies for that team. So it's, I didn't even know Jacob Bro played.
Who?
Jacob Broch. He played a game.
Yeah. Saint-Hilaire went down in game 2.
Oh.
Yeah. So Brochu had to come in and
slam the door.
Yeah.
So the rookies are leading the Phoenix of Sherbrooke. But yeah, I think the first round is, we were kind of excited for some of the matchups. They've kind of gone the way we thought. But I think the second round is kind of where you're looking for the heavy hitters to. I mean, if everything holds up the way it is right now, you've got Drummondville, Sherbrooke, Rouyn-Noranda, Victoriaville, Baie-Comeau, Bathurst, and Cape Breton, Chicoutimi. Based off the 2-0 starts, things could change. Yeah. But that Huskies-Victo one, that'll be a good series. And
that's
then Chicoutimi and Cape
Breton.
That's
the downfall of going all in. Yeah. You're one of those teams are out. It's out round 2.
Especially when they've gone the conference way.
Yeah. Like,
if you went the full way, you may not have that kind of second round. But, yeah, it's tough when you go kind of all in, and that's why it's a good thing that Moncton didn't really push more when they knew that they could be out in the second round, potentially the first round. Let's get into the weekly rewind. That's about as exciting as that's going to sound.
Weekly rewind.
Well, that's it, folks. We'll see you next week. No, I'm just kidding. Again, like we said, it's not the best start for the Wildcats. They're down 0-2 to Chicoutimi. The series shifts back to Chicoutimi tonight, and it is the most must-win of a must-win without actually being a must-win game if they want any hope of bringing this series back to to Moncton.
Yep.
Because they're coming back to Moncton, but they would like to bring Chicoutimi back with them.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Friday game one, 3-0 win for Chicoutimi. The Wildcats controlled a lot of this game, but like we had mentioned in our preview, De La Fontaine just plays well against Moncton. He did it in Cape Breton. He did it again in game one. The Wildcats hit a few posts, so there was some chances, but I talked about it in the pregame before game one. It's really cool to be the number one power play in the league in the regular season. But if that thing doesn't hit in the postseason when you need it the most, it's an issue. And that's exactly what it is right now. Yes, they held Chicoutimi to 0-4, but you had a crowd of 3,500, which is the max in round one in this city, and they were ready to explode for a goal. They were excited. They were into it. Mm-hmm. And five power play chances, the exact same power play all five times, too easy for Chicoutimi.
Yep, same setup. They know where the puck is going. And when it's not PP1, it's PP2.
Yep.
And the PP2 trigger guy is either Forche, Gendron, or Boutin. And they're in the same spot as where Loching parks. And it's just getting to be way too predictable. Yep.
And if it's not those guys, it's Mueller. And God love him, he's got a heck of a shot.
Yeah.
But he's shooting it from the top of the dot when he kind of spins and goes in. There's no... And it was the direct opposite with Chicoutimi. There's puck movement. The guys on the top are moving around. They're bringing a guy into the bumper spot in the middle of the slot. You even pointed out, you're like, hey, look at that. Guy's wide open.
Yep.
Chance for a shot. They're getting the puck down low and trying to force them to make saves. They're moving to make Moncton move to get opportunities, not win the draw, if they do. Win the draw, back to the D, quarterback, over to this guy, across, back to the D, to Loching. Because DeRozier is just standing there blocking shots.
Yeah, that's it. I never thought when we traded DeRozier that he would have such an impact on this series.
Yeah.
You know, he was a guy who could barely get into the Wildcats lineup. And now he's a 20-year-old and a captain in Chicoutimi. I never expected him to have such an impact in the series. And he's doing a great job of getting underneath Loshing's skin at the same time. Like
is he ever.
He's doing his job. He knows his role. And it's not just Loshing. He's getting under the skin of a lot of the other guys too. And that's what I didn't expect. I thought maybe Moncton's experience would help them out in this series. And at this point you're like, what experience?
Yeah.
You know, you've got your captain taking 5-minute majors. You've got, another 5-minute major here and there. It's, I did not expect this to happen. I expected, the rookies or the not so experienced guys to be the ones taking the undisciplined penalties. You had two offensive zone penalties, one by Morin, the other one I can't remember.
In game two. In game one actually.
Yeah, and it's unraveling, and we thought, okay, well, maybe the playoffs are going to be different, but it's just a carbon copy of the second half so far.
Yeah, that's the most concerning part, is it's exactly that. It's all the problems that they had last year in the second half and into, like, they kind of got rid of it in the playoffs a little bit. But this year it's reared its ugly head. Again, they've been in control of this series for a lot of the games. I mean, they had 40 shots against Chicoutimi. They jumped all over him. They just couldn't find the back of the net.
Yeah, and in game one, I mean, you can't allow a third line player to go end to end.
No.
And undress five players.
No, and I've said that about a month ago. Enough with the Olé bullshit. Put a body in somebody. Like Boutin hit Massé in game two.
Yeah.
You have to put a body in front of him. You have to get in front of him, and that's what Chicoutimi's done. They don't allow Moncton, as I said in the pregame, whoever has the neutral zone, they don't allow Moncton to use their speed, and Chicoutimi's been able to use their speed, and there's been little to no adjustments.
Yep.
Little?
There's been no adjustments.
Yeah.
None.
Well, I mean, they made an adjustment a little bit in game two to get back in the game, which, again, they lost 5-4. Can't spot teams 2-0 leads, but they didn't go away quietly. They kind of came back. Mercier, who's the best player in game one and game two, had two goals. had the massive goal with under a minute left in the second period. And I said, had they not spent half the period in the penalty box, they might win that game.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. 100% they win
because
game
they
two.
They might have even won it in regulation, whether they force overtime or not. But had they not spent 10 minutes in the penalty box, or shot, I shouldn't say they, had Sean Carrier not spent 10 minutes in the penalty box,
Without him having it being his problem or his mistake.
Again, nothing against the guy that's played three games for the Wildcats, but I it's the same problem all year. I don't know why he doesn't get any opportunity.
Yeah.
Because you saw it when he come out both times, he jumped right back into the play to make a play in the defensive zone.
Making things happen.
Yeah. And then he did the same thing after the Collard major. So we lose Collard for two games as he was suspended. One for the match, that's an automatic, and then another suspension, I think, for accumulation of codes because he's had this before.
A month ago.
Yeah, but were they penalties? Yes, they were. Could they have been avoided if the players knew a little bit of what the code was or the standard? Yes, and that's not just a Q problem. That's a WHL problem, an OHL problem, an NHL problem. They miss a knee on Lo Xing early in the period, so now you've pissed him off. Now he believes that he's been the target, and he's going to play on that edge, and that's what that hit was. He thinks he's catching the shoulder. He catches a head. But in behind the net, if you go watch the highlight, you will see Collard and DeRozier, who's basically been allowed to do whatever he wants in front of the net, take each other down, roughhouse each other, holding each other, not letting each other get back into the play, which, yes, is playoff hockey. The official skates over. If he calls it right there and takes both guys, Collard doesn't get frustrated with DeRozier in front of the net. And was it stupid for him to cross-check? Absolutely. Is that how hockey's played now? Yes, they get their sticks up because they just are, that's what they're taught. And so I was not on the postgame, I was not bailing the Wildcats out by any means, not saying they shouldn't get penalties for what they did, but there needs to be an officiating standard through the game. And I think that's where Lo Xing got angry. He was trying to play on the edge. The hit was a little high. Collard, if you call that behind the net, the play is dead, and it's a 4-on-4, and who knows what happens for the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, who was it? Somebody had mentioned it to us that the referee supervisor was in the building for game two, so that likely had something to do with it. You know, they wanted to make sure that, you know, the last thing you want to do is have your boss think that you're losing control of a game.
And, they did.
Well, they did. Yeah. But at the same time, they made the calls that they had to make, and they called the obvious ones, you know, a couple hits and, you know, a couple cross checks behind the net after a whistle. You know, it's playoff hockey, like you said. But at the end of the day, you can't go and cross-check somebody across the face. Nope. You know, you can cross-check them in across the chest and take one back, but, you know, as soon as you make contact with the face, it's pretty automatic. And, you know, Collard's a player that should probably know better. And, you know, if there's any benefit to him sitting out the next two games, well, he's from the Chicoutimi area, so he gets to spend time with his family.
Yep. And so he's real rested if they get at least one.
Yeah.
And then Sump gets the unsportsmanlike conduct. So now they got to come back after spending 5 minutes on the PK, which your team killed. Like, you have momentum after that. And that's where I think I got more frustrated, is the team had momentum from the kill and they didn't get a 4-on-4 chance, and Collard did what he did. But then they kick Sump out. So now you're without Lo Xing, without Collard, you're without Sump. Good luck. And speaking of adjustments don't get made, we barely saw Carrier, Sampson. Yep. I'm trying to think of who else we barely saw in that game in the third period. Like, he just kept rolling the guys, which eventually, I mean, they wear out. They're tired. Mm-hmm. Trent Holm, we barely saw. Like, it was tough to come back, and bad enough when you're rolling a ball uphill. But when you're without three of your top six players, it's increasingly difficult.
He's basically, what's happening right now is the quad is doing the rumble. Rumble was famous for having young players sit on the bench.
Yeah.
And not play.
Yeah.
And it just wrecked their development. And that's, I hate to say it, but hopefully it's not what's happening with 14 right now. You know, we paid a price to get him, and we're not seeing
what the dividend.
What we paid the price for. Yeah. And that's, again, nothing against him. This is all something behind the bench.
Yeah, and it's exactly what 10 dealt with last year.
Mm-hmm. But hey, with Collard out, do you think we get a promotion?
It's like you're reading my notes, bro. It's like you're reading my notes.
So we finally see Sean Carrier move up in the lineup. Or is it going to be Cooper Cormier? Is it going to be Riley Sampson? Is it going to be Gabe Smith?
Jack Hayne.
Who's going to be given that opportunity? Because I think you and I, Adam, know who it should be.
Well, based on 70 games, we have a pretty good idea who it should be.
But we're not the one calling the shots.
Nope. And we know the guy calling the shots doesn't listen. Everyone else does, we think.
When I see that lineup, you know, I really want to see 14 either on line two.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him on line two. Will it happen? Probably not.
Yeah. You're literally, I didn't go down a page, so you didn't actually read my notes, but it's like you read my notes. Game three, obviously, like I said, 3, 4, 5 in Chicoutimi. We start with game three. You can't get back into the series without getting one, like Heptich said. No Collard suspended. So they've been better on the road.
Yeah.
So that's the hope I'm holding on to, is they've been better on the road.
I agree.
They can win three in a row on the road. It won't be easy, but they can do it. But Dan has to go back to what worked in the first half. And that's Loesching, Denoyer, Mercier. And then
Dan needs to go back to his daughter's wedding. That's what happened.
Yeah. Step one. Yeah. But he needs to go back to where it worked in the first half, and that was Loesching, Denoyer, Mercier, the MCL line. Mueller, Lounsbury, and Collard in game five. But it's got to be Carrier.
In that case, it's still the MCL line.
Yeah, and then Smith, Sumpf, and Hayne. Sam, because he wants to put him on the second line. And then when Collard comes back in game five, you just move Carrier down to the third line. Because that's where you slotted Ogier for most of the first half. And they're the same player. They're little guys with a lot of energy and a lot of skill. That slots in perfectly there. And then you got Sampson, Trenholm, Cormier, Hayne. They can all kind of interject out of the fourth line. And again, like I said on the live, everyone, you have to remember who's reading the social media posts when the lineups come out, whether it's ours or theirs. You can't ask why a kid's on the, like, you just can't. You know, like, you can't, like, the family's reading that. These are 16-year-old kids. It's not his fault he's getting put on the second line. And I don't even think he's on there to play there. I think he's on there as a coaching tactic because as soon as the game starts, he's on the fourth line.
Yeah.
With Trenholm and Ogier in the first game. Like, it just, they got to go back to that. Enough sheltering Carrier, enough putting him on the fourth line. We saw him make a difference. Let the kid play. And you got to switch up the power plays now. You have to put power play one out because you got to get LaRoche. Those are two names together. Loesching away from DeRozier. Because now Yannick Jean has the ability to line match. And it worked when he didn't have the ability to do it, when they didn't really roll lines to keep Loesching away from DeRozier. And you have to try and get Loesching going. It's not a demotion. It's a team first style. And, you know, if they get a power play and you put out power play two and they throw DeRozier out there, cool. He's out there, and then you throw Loesching out halfway through and he either stays out and he's dog tired or he goes off and you get him away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, roll a different line, put Loesching up and down, go 11-7. Like, that's another option. Go 11-7, let Hackett get some time, and then you can move Loesching around all over the ice and put him with all different lines to try and get him away from DeRozier, because it is working. He is in his head. He's getting away with what he wants to get away with, and Loesching is getting frustrated. I would actually, now that I read all this, I would go 11-7.
Yeah.
Tonight.
It would be an interesting approach, that's for sure. Yeah, but if they do 11 and 7, guess who's going to be the extra forward scratched?
Oh, it'll be 14.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be by any means, but it probably will be.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done. Like, guys in other markets that aren't allowed to go after their coaches. And there's, like I said, there's times where as much as we'd like to be official, it's times a good thing we're not official.
Got that right. You got that right.
Because if 14 is the 12th forward scratched, you're giving up on the series.
Yeah.
Yep. If you're trying 11-7. As well, the other note I had, it's 2 years, three playoff series now. Nothing against our puck moving D, but they're great in the regular season. We need big, mean defenders.
Mm-hmm.
When we go mobile. Yeah.
Defenseman.
Yep.
I mean, I understand the small defenseman, the offensive minded, yep. You know, this and that. We don't have any shutdown guys.
We have Boutin.
We have Boutin, who will just, you know, gives it 110% every shift.
Yep.
And other than that, like, it's
every time we were in front of Chiarlo and Rousseau last year, guys were getting punished.
Because we had Hamel.
No. When we were in front of those guys, our guys were getting punished.
Oh, yeah.
In front of De La Fontaine this year. Uriso, DeRozier. I'm trying to think of who their other defenseman is that's doing it.
They got Ursaro.
Prudhomme. Brulens. Yeah. That's the other one. Uriso and Brulens. They're punishing our guys. When guys get in front of Steinman, it's just a slight move. Like, just get out of here.
Yeah.
Not a cross check. Not a get up out of here. And you want the big you want the puck moving defenseman, and I understand it in the regular season. But when it comes to the playoffs, and it's not even like this series. It's now a trend. We need the big bruising tough defenseman, and like you said, that was Hamel last year.
Yeah. No, you're right.
I'm not criticizing the way the team's built either.
Nope. Because I have nothing wrong with how the team's built.
Nope.
I think there's a leadership concern.
Yep.
But I also felt this. I felt there was a leadership concern last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
This team, I mean, I don't want to look too far ahead, but there's one player next year that I think needs to be wearing a letter. And you know exactly who it is. And if Dinoyer gets a letter next year, I'm happy. Because he is the future captain. He is what every team needs in a captain. And I'm sure he wants to speak up. But, you know, maybe his voice is just lost because of how... How young he is, right?
Yeah. So, he reminds you of a certain number 11.
Yeah, he does. Just with what he brings, and you know, you hear him in the press box on the bench.
Yeah.
You know, there's not very many guys you hear four stories up, four levels up. One of them is Desnoyers.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what you need. You need vocal leaders. You need vocal players. Because that's what gets teams going.
Yeah. That's exact. Yeah. And it's just somehow these guys got to flip the switch and play like they did in the first half. I know it's tough. But I even joked, let Heptich, Samuel, and Tessier on the bench, and Dan can be on the headset above and watch the game from above. Because the team just responds better. It's proven. We've seen it in the games Heptich has coached last year and the three this year. It's just something is amiss with this team going into the playoffs. Because I had faith that what was happening in the second half could be turned around in the playoffs like it was against Baie-Comeau when we at least got the split last year.
Yeah.
But it's not this year. So we know the Wildcats are coming back to Moncton.
Mm-hmm.
Are they bringing Chicoutimi with them?
Look, I'll say this, and this is all I'm going to say. I'm not going to get into detail.
Nope.
I'm going to say one thing and one thing only. I would hate if next week's episode is the season finale.
Everyone's favorite part of the show.
Eric Murray, realtor, buyer house from him, stick dab of the week.
And I think I can speak for you, Ad, when I say the same thing.
That's why I hit the button, because I'm not saying anything else.
Okay, so stick tab of the week. This one's going to a fan.
What?
That we all know. Véronique Anseneau.
Oh, oui.
Who had the opportunity to go to a PWHL game and sit up in the broadcast booth with Kenzie Lalonde and is it Cheryl Pounder? Cheryl Pounder. Because no thanks to us, I guess, you know, kind of got her into a contest and she was, Kenzie picked her to, you know, go to a game and kind of get to experience the PWHL life. So, you know, she had some air time on TSN and she did extremely well. And else, I think she's going to be missed at the Avenir Center next year because she's off to the University of Ottawa.
Yep.
To study a sports management, I think. You might have to correct me on that one, but I think that's where it's at. Yep. And
a couple of years, we'll be emailing her to talk to players.
I was going to say, Richie, better watch out. You know, she might be coming for your job. But no, I just thought I'd I wanted to give it to her last week, but you decided to take the stick tap last week, so yeah. I had this one kind of rolled over. But no, that was a few weeks. That was a couple weekends ago. No, that's awesome. You know, it's clearly she's been around the game for a while. She's picked up some things that clearly, you know, if she gets into a role like that, especially with the Wildcats, there's going to be some huge improvements. Not to say that things aren't great right now, but you know, I think she's kind of got that knowledge and expertise and the love of the game to bring the you know, the business operations side of things to like I said, another level.
Yeah, and good on Kenzie as well, because the contest was like 2.5 months ago. And she won it, but the timing didn't work out, so she waited till we weren't quite in the playoffs as well. Véronique was going to Ottawa, and I asked her if she was on the broadcast more than just the interview, and she was sitting with the headset listening to everything.
Nice.
And seeing all the background and all that stuff. And it was at TD Place, which if there was a rink other than here and other than Barrie that you would love and be a huge fan of and be there every game, it would be TD Place. Because it's got a Mr. Puffs on location.
Oh, frig off.
I'm dead serious.
Oh, man.
Dead serious, bro.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't open when we were there. So we were there like at our summer trip. I wanted to see because TD Place, where the 67s play, is basically underneath and on the backside of the football stadium.
Okay.
So it's kind of underneath. So one wall is like completely straight and the other wall is like concave to have. Kind of, it's basically like the Moncton Coliseum, like how it had one side with the second level,
and then
the other side goes straight up, and the players in behind, they walk around with football players, like they all kind of just hang out together. If you want to see it, go on YouTube and go. There's a YouTube show called Behind the Barber Poles. I know this is your stick tab. I'm trying not to steal it from you.
No, no, it's okay.
But Behind the Barber Poles, it follows the Ottawa 67's last season in their run, and you see a lot of the underneath stuff. But, yeah.
It was Jack Astor's there and everything.
Yeah, man. It's, like, the store is right there. They've got
I also did know it was $300,000 to open a Mr. Puffs franchise.
Yeah, or else you would.
Yeah.
I mean, we did talk about it.
We did.
Yeah.
Put it downtown.
And it's funny. I
was at the Avenir Center.
I was talking to Véronique about her experience there, and the only two rinks she hasn't gone to, Val-d'Or and Wren.
Really?
It's much easier when you live in Ottawa, and it's just a quick jaunt up based
on
schedule.
That's it. She's going to be she's looking forward to that Gatineau-Val-d'Or road trip already.
Yeah.
She's going to have all three games.
So here's – and for those looking, you just go to the, so there's the arena.
Yeah, and then the football
stadium's on the other side.
Yeah.
And it's literally just, it's kind of like Halifax where it's just got a road down the middle of it where Lansdowne Park is. And you just come to the corner, you turn, and it's right on the corner there. Man. Like it's literally 15 feet. It's right there. It's not there now, but it's right there. Wow. And yeah, it wasn't open when we were there because I come out of the, I didn't get to go into the arena. I kind of went into the,
staring through the glass like a nerd.
Because I hadn't started their training camp yet. Yeah. But, and then I come down the stairs. I turned around. I was like, let's go to Mr. Puffs. And she's like, I can't do Mr. Puffs. I'm like, let's go to Mr. Puffs. But we ended up getting in Cornwall when we were going to visit friends. But yeah, that's a rink you would be in heaven with.
Never go wrong with Mr. P.
The Stick Tap of the Week, sponsored by Eric Murray Real Estate with the RE/MAX Avante team. If you're looking to buy or sell a home in the greater Moncton or surrounding area, make sure to check him out on social media or give him a call at 506-863-8802.
That brings us to the Wildcast Wildcat of the Week, presented by Rosemary Lynn Massage and Spa. We're right now till April 21st. You can book a new set of acrylic nails when... Sorry, when you book a new set of acrylic nails, I should have let you do this. You killed it last week.
Oh, well,
you'll receive your first fill for $25. Don't forget they got the loyalty card when you book 9 spa services. You get one free if you want to take advantage of that. Call the book at 506-830-1224 or book with them in person at 1224 Mountain Road. It's a pretty simple choice. I said it a little bit earlier. The best player in this series, both in Game 1 and Game 2, was number 10. He was the most tenacious forward. He played an I don't give a shit game in terms of going into the dirty areas, making things happen. He had two goals, including one that just about got us back into the hockey game with the in the final minute of the second period. So the Wildcast Wildcat of the week goes to number 10, Alex Mercier. You asked for it. We did it again. The third annual Game 3 watch party goes tonight at Five Bridges Neighborhood Pub and Grill in their events room. The game starts at 8:30, so I know. It actually pisses me off. Every other game in Quebec starts at 8. Exactly. Well, don't... We're trying to sell this, and you're passed out. Every game starts at 8, except this one that starts at 8:30. So, but yeah, we'll have... We'll try and get two TVs, but we got a big projection screen sound. So it is burger night. Apparently, they've got an unbelievable peanut butter burger there.
Peanut butter jelly time. Peanut butter jelly time. I'm
trying to see Five Bridges.
Peanut butter jelly. Peanut butter jelly. Peanut butter jelly in a baseball bat.
I love it. Menu.
Where I know their Bloomin' Onion's really good. Ever had a Bloomin' Onion before?
Nope.
Really?
Don't like onions.
You don't like the onions?
I don't like onions.
Onions. Peanut butter burger.
Peanut butter burger. Half pound burger topped with creamy peanut butter and double smoked bacon.
Ugh. Gross.
What?
Patin Week is a... Patin Fest is a...
You don't like... That doesn't sound good to you?
No, it doesn't.
Really?
It doesn't sound appetizing. But patins do.
But patins do. 100%.
And Patin Fest starts in 10 days.
Yeah, I think... Do they have a patin there?
Oh, they got to.
You would, I think they're part of Poutine Fest. But either way, it is burger night. Tonight, game 3 goes at 8:30. Thanks for Five Bridges and partnering with us to host a game watch party. It's just game 3 right now. If we get a W and people want to come back the next night, we will see if we can make it happen. So bring your jerseys, bring your noisemakers. We've had a lot of fun in the past couple of years. So again, thanks to Rob and his crew at Five Bridges. For Jeremy, I'm Adam. We'll see you next week. Hopefully not for the season finale.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Follow us on social media at Moncton Wildcast.